We're holding on set at Gimel Amud Beis, the second line of the widest lines. Let's see, 18 lines from the bottom, looks like. We learned yesterday, we were learning about Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, and the last thing we learned was that the last thing we learned was that each of them had the cape had six special qualities, which are listed in the pasuk, and we discussed what in particular what the what the last one means, what two of them means, Asha'in behem kol mum and Asha'koyach behem lamed behechal amelech, which those two are less obvious than the other ones, what they mean, which is why the Gemara digressed to explain what they mean. So now, continuing about them, the Gemara says, when they were first brought to Nebuchadnezzar's palace, it says, "Vayhi bohem b'nei Yehuda." Among them, so now he brought boys from different countries to be trained as ministers and whatever of his. Among them were from B'nai Yehuda, Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. So the question is, does B'nai Yehuda go on all of them or only some of them? So Omer Rabbi Eliezer, it says on the side, it's supposed to be Kulam B'nai Yehuda, all four of them are from Shevet Yehuda, which agrees with what we learned yesterday, that long before that, hundreds of years before that, Boaz had given Ruth the six barley grains or ears of barley, saying that she's indicating with that she's going to have six special descendants. And we listed among the six were Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. So that fits with this that they were all from Shevet Yehuda. They were all descended from David. On the other hand, Rav Shmuel Nachmani, Omer Daniel, B'nai Yehuda, B'chanani, Mishael, Azariah, Mishar Shvatim. Rav Shmuel Nachmani learns that only Daniel was from Shevet Yehuda. And the rest of them were and the rest of them were from other and the rest of them were from other Shevatim. According to that then according to that then we wouldn't have the Darasha that we said yesterday about six people, etc. Okay. Now, earlier, 100 years earlier, there had been a story involving Chizkiyahu. After Chizkiyahu had after Sennacherib's army had been destroyed, which is what we're going to learn about in the next piece of Gemara, which is what we're going to learn about soon, beginning on Tzadik Dalet Amud Aleph, and Chizkiyahu himself had been dangerously ill, and Hashem made a nest that he recovered. Then after that, the pasuk says that the king of Babel of that time, Meroidach Baladan, his name was, sent messengers to Chizkiyahu to find out what happened, and I guess to make a peace treaty with him and all. And Chizkiyahu was very happy to see them, and he showed them all his treasuries. Even it says he opened up the Oren in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and showed them the Luchos. And then Yeshayahu, the Navi, comes to him with a very sharp nevuah and says, "You shouldn't have done that. And now, as a result of that, all of those treasures that you were showing them are one day going to be plundered by Babel 100 years from now." And Yeshaya tells him, which is what the pasuk is going to quote over here, "Umimanecha sheyetzu among your children who are going to come out of you, Yukochu will be taken, sarisim behecha melech, and they will be sarisim in the palace of the king of Babel." So referring to Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, according to Rabbi Lazar, it would mean all of them, and according to Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmeni, it would mean Daniel only. Now, the word sarisim has different meanings. Often in Tanakh, we find it being used to mean generically king's ministers or other important officials, but the word saris also means somebody who was castrated, right? Which Goyish a king, and in many Goyish kingdoms in those days, those two things went together. A person who's entering the king's service would be castrated so that he can never marry and have, he can never have children, and that way he'll be completely devoted to the king, especially in Megillas Esther. In Megillas Esther, you have the sarisim who are in charge of the women's quarters. For obvious reasons, you would want someone like that. In any case, what does it mean over here when the Navi is telling Chizkiyahu that your descendants are going to be sarisim? So my sarisim, Rav Amar sarisim mamash. Rav says it means exactly what it sounds like. They were sarisim. They were castrated by Nebuchadnezzar's orders for the same reason, so that way they can be completely devoted to what he's to what he wants them to do, and they're not going to have normal family lives. Rabbi Chanina says it means that Avodah Zarah was castrated in their times. Once the whole thing happened with the statue that we learned about yesterday and all the Nisim, then people began to realize that Avodah Zarah is not that Avodah Zarah is not worth much, that's worthless.
So in other words, then in that case, then in that case, Yeshaya is telling Chizkiyahu that yes, there's going to be that positive angle on it. But on the other hand, the fact is, it's going to have to involve a golos. They're going to be in Heichal Melech Bavel. The fact that something positive is going to come out of that's a side thing, really. Either way, the point is, it was definitely a harsh nevuah to him. But the question is there also something positive in it that Mistarsa Avodah Zarah b'yameihem? So the Gemara says so the Gemara says b'yameihem. I understand, according to the opinion, that Avodah Zarah was castrated and made impotent in their times. As Hainu Dechtiv, that explains the pasuk when they got out of the fire. It says v'chavala isai b'hoin, there was no injury to them. So we would understand that to mean, just like we learned yesterday, that to begin with, when they were first brought to the palace, it says yolodim asha'en behem kol mum, they were boys in which there was no mum. So now also, when it says v'chavala isai b'hoin, there was no. There was no injury to them. That means that because they had never been injured, they had never been castrated. So because that works according to that opinion. But if they were castrated, that's a chaval, that's a mum right there. And the answer is chavla denura. Fine. What it means is there was no injury to them of the fire. but not to say that there might not have been injuries from other things such as that. So no proof. All right, the Gemara says, but the pasuk also says that there was no smell of fire on them. So automatically, if there's no smell of fire, then of course there's no injury to them of the fire. So therefore, why would the pasuk have to say it? And it means exactly that. Like chavla, it means they weren't injured, and there wasn't even a smell of smoke on them. So no proof one way or the other. All right, the Gemara says, b'yameihem. I understand, according to the opinion, that Avodah Zarah was castrated and made impotent in their times. And by the way, I mean, of course, it doesn't mean people stopped worshipping Avodah Zarah right away. There was still several hundred years of it, but around that time, and you find Lahavdil in general history, around that time is when people are starting to realize in the general world, as well in the world at large as well, that Avodah Zarah is not really is completely worthless, actually. You find not long after that, for example, you have the great Greek philosophers who started looking at the world in more rational ways rather than considering everything as because of the gods. So it had an effect far beyond Babel. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "B'shlem l'man d'amar sh'nistarsa v'rezar b'yameihem haynu d'chtiv." You have a pasuk also in Yeshaya. Ki koyamar Hashem, so says Hashem, l'sarisim asher yishmur es shabbosim v'gemer, to the sarisim who observe my shabbosim. That Hashem says that Hashem praises them and says that he's going to reward them. So now this pasuk is referring to Dani Yochanani Mishael v'Azariah. So if you say that sarisim means shenistarsa v'rezar b'yameihem, then the word sarisim is a compliment to them, that they're the ones who accomplished through their mesiras, not the Hanani Mishael v'Azariah primarily, through their mesiras nefesh, they accomplished to weaken the power of Avodah Zarah permanently. So therefore, Hashem is complimenting them and praising them and saying that he's going to reward them. But according to the opinion that it means they were actually castrated, why would the pasuk be using a derogatory term about the tzaddikim? Why is it important in that context to mention that they were sarisim? And the answer is, according to that opinion, it was both of them. They were actually made sarisim, but also they had the schus that through them, Avodah Zarah was permanently castrated and weakened. So yes, the pasuk, there's no question. In other words, they were in fact done that by Nebuchadnezzar. But the question is, was that only what the word sarisim means, or does it have a second meaning as well? Well, still the Gemara says, mamish. Well, if you say that they were sarisim literally, that they were actually castrated, then you have the next pasuk continues in Yeshaya, that Hashem says, don't think that you have no future. Hashem says, I'll give them in my house, in the Beis Hamikdash, and in my walls, I'll give them a memorial and a name, better than sons and daughters. In other words, they weren't able to have children because Nebuchadnezzar had done this to them. So therefore, Hashem is saying that don't you worry, your schar and your memorial is going to be greater than you would have from descendants. But if you say that Avodah Zarah was castrated in their time, my toiv mi bonim and bonus, what do you mean better than sons and daughters? They can have sons and daughters themselves. Now, Rashi points out, you can't just say that again. You're going to answer that it means this opinion says both, because then there's no machlokes. So you have to say, in other words, one opinion is saying that it was both. The opinion that says Shenisau is saying they were in fact castrated. But then in or no, rather the other way around. The opinion that says they were castrated says it's that, as well as that also Shenistar. But the other opinion is saying, no, it's only Shenistar and nothing, no physical injury was ever done to them. You can't say that it said that they're saying also, but a physical injury was done to them, because then there's no machloikas. Then there'd be no reason to present a machloikas in the first place. So according to that opinion, they were never harmed and castrated physically. So why does Hashem have to promise them something then better than children? And by the way, we learned yesterday, according to one opinion, that they did go to Eretz Yisrael afterwards and they had children. So certainly according to that opinion, they hadn't been castrated. But anyway, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok mi banim shehayu lahem kvaru meisu. It means they had children previously, and those children died, so Hashem promises them, even though your children that you had before have died, and therefore they're not memorializing your name for future generations, but I'll make sure that your names are not forgotten and that you're always going to have a remembrance in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara continues. Now it continues in the pasuk there in Yeshaya, after Hashem gives this promise. The pasuk continues. Shame my shame olam etin loy asher lo yikaris. The pasuk continues. Hashem says, I will give him an eternal name that will not be cut off. Now, until now, it's been speaking in the plural. So we can say it refers to all of them, Hanani Mishael, Daniel, Hanani Mishael, Azariah. But now it says that Hashem said, now it says, Hashem says, I will give him an eternal name that will never be cut off. So who's the him? Amar of Tanchum, Dorosh Bakapora Bitsipori, it Bakapora gave a Dorosh in the city of Tzipori, Zeh Sefer Daniel Shenikra al Shmoi. This refers to Sefer Daniel, which is called after the name of that of its protagonist, after the name of Daniel. So now he has a permanent remembrance for all time. As opposed to, meaning, in other words, as the Gemara is going to point out the contrast with Nehemiah, who lived around that time, and whose name is not named after him, as the Gemara now is going to work out. But it means, so in other words, out of all the people who worked for Nebuchadnezzar, and Zerubbabel, who was also identical with Nehemiah, also worked for a Goyish king. He was his cupbearer. He was the cupbearer of Dariush, the king of Persia. But he, unlike Daniel, did not have his sefer named after him. So the Gemara says, Taka, why not? Mechti, let's consider. Kol milu de Ezra, Nehemiah ben Hakalia Amrinu. Everything in Ezra was actually said by Nehemiah. Now, we don't mean literally everything. If you look in Sefer Ezra and a Tanakh, you'll find nowadays it is split into two parts called Ezra and Nehemiah. But that split was made by the Goyim about 700, 800 years ago, same way as they split Shmuel and Melachim and Divrei Yomim into two Sfarim, same way as they came up with the divisions of Prakim. Anyway, so they also split Ezra and Nehemiah into two. And it is a sensible distinction, because at the beginning of the Nehemiah portion, it starts off Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia. These are the words of Nehemiah. But the Gemara is saying all of it, meaning, because if you look at the respective sizes, the Ezra portion is much smaller than the Nehemiah portion. And even the portion that's written, even the portion that bears Ezra's name, parts of it maybe were written by Nehemiah. So the Gemara can say all, not meaning literally all, but meaning most of it was written by Nehemiah. So by rights, the Sefer should bear Nehemiah's name, not Ezra's. So why is it called Ezra? So Nehemiah ben Chachalia, my timer, le'ikri sifra al shmei. So why was his sefer not named after him? So the Gemara gives a couple of answers. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba'Abba, b'nei she'hechzik tov la'atzmai. One reason is because he took credit for himself, for the good things that he did. Shenema, he says several times in the Pesukim over there, Zachro liya l'kai l'tova, Hashem, remember me for good. A few times in the Nehemiah portion of Ezra, he says, remember me, Hashem, for the good things that I accomplished in Eretz Yisrael, rebuilding the walls of Yerushalayim, cleaning up the problem that people were intermarrying, setting up that people should be giving trumas and maaseros properly, etc. So because he's speaking like that, then therefore, it's considered like a tiny bit of gaiva, and therefore, therefore he loses his real name. Therefore he loses the ability to have his sefer named after him. So the Gemara says, David Nami Meima Omar. Didn't David say something very similar? Zachreni Hashem Birtzayin Amecha. Hashem, remember me with the goodwill of your people. Pakdeni Bishua Sacha. Mention me when you're saving. In other words, when you're remembering and helping out the Jewish people, remember and save me together with them. But we see that he's saying on his on for himself, Zachrei ni Hashem. And the answer is David Rachmi Hudkaboy, because David is asking for it as a matter of Rachmanos from Hashem. He's not saying, he's not like taking credit. He's asking Hashem, please have Rachmanos on me, as opposed to Nehemiah saying, and as opposed to Nehemiah is taking credit for his chosim. In fact, an explanation on that is David is using Shem Havaya, Zochreni Hashem Birtzayna Mecha, as opposed to Nehemiah is using Zochra Li Elikai L'Tova, implying that from the point of view of Elikim, of Din, of strict justice, I deserve reward. And for that, the Gemara is saying he lost the ability to have a safer name for him. That's one reason. Then the Gemara says another reason, Rabbi Yosef Omar, the reason is because he spoke negatively against earlier generations. Shenemar, Nehemiah describes one of the things that he accomplished. So he's describing over there how, in his times, the economy in Eretz Yisrael was very bad and people were having a very hard time. Many people were struggling to make a living and pay their debts and all. So he says, I want to contrast how I acted with the previous governors of Eretz Yisrael. His official title was Pacha, was Pecha, the governor of that area of Eretz Yisrael. So he says, Vapacha, so he's showing him. The earlier pachais, the earlier governors that were for me, they were very hard on the people. They took from them. They demanded of them contributions of bread and of wine. Echad or acha, really, it says in the pasuk, kesef shkolim aboyim. Plus, they also assessed them for 40 silver shekels. The government, as opposed to Nehemiah says, I didn't do that. I didn't take all of those taxes and things that I would have been entitled to from them. Even though he goes on to say that his expenses for entertaining guests and officials and whatever were very big, but he didn't want to burden the people because he realized what a hard time they're having of it. Now the problem was, the problem is by saying in general the previous governors, Af al Daniel show you God sipper, in fact, he's even speaking negatively against Daniel, who had been one of those earlier governors and was greater than him. So how could Nehemiah do that? How could he say generically the governors before me, which includes Daniel, which, as the Gemara is going to work out, was greater than Nehemiah in a way, and therefore for that he lost the opportunity to have a safer name for him. Before we go further with that, there is an interesting point that the Chida says, though, in a couple of his Sfarim. The fact is that nowadays, you look in any Tanakh, you will find that Nehemiah does have the portion of a safer name for him. So we're saying, you know, that was done by the Goyim, but nevertheless, everything is milamayla. The fact that it became accepted by us Jews, there must be some significance to it. So he says like this, at least according to the first reason that was saying that it was a matter of a shtickle gaiva on his part. Hundreds of years later, it's brought in Sefer HaGogolim that hundreds of years later, you have the whole story in Brachas with Reb Gamliel, the Nasi, who was deposed, and Reb Elazar ben Azariah was appointed Nasi instead. Now, so he explains Reb Gamliel is a Gilgul of Nehemiah. He may have even been a descendant of his. They're both from Malchus Beis David. But anyway, and Reb Elazar ben Azariah is an actual descendant, and he learns that, and that also he was a Gilgul of Ezra. So there you had then, the one representing Nehemiah then was deposed in favor of the one representing Ezra, and he had to suffer this tremendous public humiliation because of it. So therefore, the Eibishter decided that you know what, as a result of that, now he doesn't need, now he's been cleaned up, this thing that he didn't act properly, and therefore now, in the fullness of time, he can have his safer name for him, which eventually the Eibishter brought about that would in fact happen. So the Gemara says, "We know him to God and we men. How do we know that Daniel is greater than Nehemiah?" Dichtiv like this. Daniel describes one of his visions. He had several visions of the four kingdoms that are going to rule over the Jewish people and various details in them. So he says, "Veroisi ani Daniel avadi asamara. I, Daniel, alone saw this vision. V'hanoshim ashahoyu imi leiro asamara. The men who were with me did not see this vision. Aval charoda gdoila nafa aleihem. But a tremendous." Tremendous trembling and fear fell on them. And so they ran away. So they ran away and hid. Now, when he's saying when it's saying that these men who did not see the vision, now the implication of saying that is that there's some kind of chiddush. He's saying these are men I would have expected to be seeing the same vision as I do. We're not talking about stam people, but nevertheless they didn't. So man ninu anoshim, who exactly are these people? This refers to Chagai, Schalya, and Malachi, who were with him. Now, we learned yesterday there were different opinions what happened to them after the whole story with the statue. Our Gemara is obviously following the opinion that they survived that incident and went on to live for many years because this nevuah, this vision of Daniel's is many years later. Anyway, now the point is like this, Rashi says, given that, we're saying that they, now their Nevi'im, as the Gemara is going to point out, their Nevi'im, Daniel, is not considered a Navi. Nevertheless, this vision he saw and they didn't. That shows that in a way he's greater than them. And the Gemara is going to point out, in a way they're greater than him, in a way he's greater than them. But be that as it may, Nehemiah is neither. Nehemiah was not a Navi and did not have visions at all. He was a big tzaddik and a Baal Ruach HaKodesh and all that, but he didn't have nevuah or he didn't have nevuah or visions of Malachim. So therefore, so Daniel is definitely greater than Nehemiah, and therefore, when Nehemiah is saying generically, the governors who were before me treated the people harshly, then he should have said, except for Daniel. And he didn't, and therefore that's one reason we're saying that his name was taken away from his sefer. So the Gemara points out, Inu adif minei v'ihu adif minayhu. It comes out then that Hanani, Mishael, v'Azaria in a way are greater than Daniel, and in a way Daniel is greater than them. Inu adif minei, in one way they're greater than him, de'inhu nevi v'ihu lav navi. They're nevi'im, he's not a navi. Now, there are places where it actually lists Daniel as a Navi, but one point is, in other words, that first of all, you find that he was spoken to through Malachim, which is a lower level of Nevuah, as opposed to Chagas, Zechariah, Malachi, are all speaking directly in Hashem's name. Zechariah, at the beginning of his Sefer, actually has several Nevuahs where he has a Malach speaking to him, explaining to him, but afterwards he has Nevuahs directly from Hashem, as opposed to Daniel doesn't. In addition, there's also the point that that Daniel was not Tosfos elsewhere explains that that Daniel was not sent with a nevuah to the Jewish people. All the visions that he saw were meant for himself, basically. So he wrote them down, and Hashem tells him, the Navi, the Malach tells him, keep them secret. Don't reveal the meanings of them, because they were telling about when Mashiach is going to come, and that information has to be kept secret. But the point is, he was never sent with an actual nevuah. Go tell the Jewish people such and such. So therefore, that in that sense, he's not a navi. So the ihu odif minayhu, on the other hand, was saying in a way that in a way they were greater than him. In a way he's greater than them. Because this vision that it's describing there in Sefer Daniel, he saw they didn't see. So yeah, the bottom line is, as far as whether Daniel is considered a Navi or not, there are, in Seder Olam, it lists him as a Navi, but again, there's different possibilities that it means, again, that it was only through a Malach, or he wasn't sent directly to the Jewish people, etc. Another way of understanding it, in fact, Maharsha says it just means he had Ruach HaKodesh, he didn't have Nevuah at all. So the Gemara asks, v'chima'acha. So now, if we're saying that Hanani, Mishael, v'Azaria did not see this vision, my time of Ivus, then why were they afraid? The pasuk says a tremendous trembling fell on them. Why, if they didn't see, what do they have to be afraid of? And the answer is, midi. They themselves didn't actually see anything, mazlaihu chozi, but their mazel saw. The mazel, meaning their shurdash and neshama, the root of their neshama, lamaila, that was able to perceive that something is going on. Omer Ravina, so Ravina says, Shmamina, Haiman de Mivis. You see from that, sometimes you can have a person is terrified without an obvious reason. Afagav de Iule Chozi, Mazle Chozi, then it means, even though he doesn't see anything with his senses, but his mazel senses it, that there's something going on over here. My takante, so what should he do to correct the situation? He doesn't even know what it is. How is he supposed to stay away from it? Midi, let him jump 4 amos away from where he is. 4 amos is a mokum of its own, a place of its own. So that way, by jumping away from there, then that represents like now he's in a new place. So now, like whatever it is, that whatever shed or whatever it is that was harassing him before, won't is a, he's now in a new place, and they're not that it can't go for Amos, of course, but the point is, like now he's in a new place, and now like he's put himself in a new situation. Inami, or another possibility, liquid Krishma, he should say Krishma, which the Gemara mentions elsewhere, is effective against Mazikim. Now, we're going to learn later on in our perek, we learned briefly in the Mishnah, we're going to learn in more detail later in the perek, that you're not supposed to use Divrei Torah for refuah. So how could he be using it over here to save himself from that? But that's talking about where That's talking about that where he's already ill. Here we're talking about that's to save himself from potential danger. So therefore, that's a so there's a he's only been terrified so far. Nothing actually, no actual harm has happened to him yet. Therefore, he's entitled to say Kriya Shema to save himself from that harm. Similar to the way a person might say a Kapitel Tehillim to save himself from to ask Hashem to save him from a bad situation that may be coming. So there's that. What if he's standing in a filthy place where he's not able to say Kriya Shema? And let's say also he's not able to jump the four Amos. Then he should say the following statement. The goat in the slaughterhouse is fatter than me. In other words, in effect, he's saying to the Shadim, go bother the goats and leave me alone. One thing is, you find in some places in Tanakh that Shadim are called Seirim, which literally means goats, because sometimes they would appear in the form of goats. So therefore, he's Dafka mentioning a goat. So therefore, he's Dafka mentioning a goat. Like, in other words, you have more of a connection with goats than you do with me. So go check with the goats and leave me alone. Okay. We mentioned Chizkiyahu before about the nevuah that was said to him that his descendants, Daniel, and according to one opinion, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, are going to be taken to Babel. So now the Gemara is going to go in and talk at length about the whole story of Chizkiyahu. The pasuk says Lamarbe Hamisra. Hashem says to increase the rulership, or Shalom and Kates, and there's going to be no end of peace. In other words, there's going to be coming a king. This is Yeshaya is telling this at the time to King Ahaz, who was a Rosha, that in his son's time, in Chizkiyahu's times, there's going to be a tremendous increase in the power and the peace of the Jewish monarchy, of the Jewish kingdom. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rab Tanchum, Dorash Bar Kapora B'Tzipori." So Bar Kapora gave the following drasha in the city of Tzipori. Maybe that's another reason the Gemara is bringing it in, because before we also had a drasha that Bar Kapora gave in Tzipori. Anyway, Mipnei Ma Kol Mem Shebe'emtza Teva Pasuach V'Zeh Sosum. The word Lamarbe, if you look in the Tanakh, the mem over there is a mem struma, is a shloss mem, which you don't find in the middle of a word. By the way, Mefoshim will explain that maybe on a simple sense, it's meant to be two separate words. Lom Rabba, to them there will be greatness, but the Gemara is understanding it as actually one word. So why do you have usually a mem in the middle of a word is open, v'zeh sosum, and this one is closed? Bikish HaKadosh Baruch Hu lasses Chizkiyahu Mashiach, because Hashem intended that Chizkiyahu should be Mashiach, v'Sancheiriv Gog u'Magog, and that Sancheiriv would stand in for Gog u'Magog. We know that the whole thing, Yechezkel describes it later on, other Nevi'im describe it more briefly, that there's going to be a tremendous battle before Mashiach comes. In our times, Yeshayahu, that World War II more than fulfilled that. Be that as it may, the point is that there's going to be this war of Gog u'Magog, and Hashem intended that Sancheiriv's attack on Yerushalayim is going to be the Melchemes Gog u'Magog, and then when he's defeated, Chizkiyahu will be Mashiach. But Omra Midas Hadin lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Midas Hadin, Hashem's Midah of justice, says before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Uma David Melech Yisrael, Madach David, Sha'oma Kama Shiras V'Tishbachas Tefanecha, he said many songs and praises to you. He said the whole Sefer Tehillim, Lo Yasisi Mashiach, and you didn't make him Mashiach, Chizkiyah, Sha'asisa Lo Kol HaNisim Alolu, here with Chizkiyah, where you made him all these Nisim, that he was saved from Sancheiriv, and he was and he was and he recovered from a dangerous illness. So all those great nisim happened to him. V'lo, and he didn't say shira before you. Mashiach, how can you make a Mashiach? So in other words, the Mem Struma, Rashi says two possibilities. One is that the Mem Struma, the Shloss Mem, would represent that Hashem planned to do it, to make him Mashiach, but then didn't do that. So it's represented like the possibility was closed off. The other possibility, Rashi says Hashem was going to close off the Tzaris of Mashiach. That's it, no more Tzaris for the Jewish people, and Chizkiyahu will be Mashiach. Then Rashi brings a third explanation that it represents the point that Chizkiyahu's mouth was closed and did not say Shira. So for all those reasons, you have the Shloss Mem over there. It's brought in various places that the end of Osius in general represent the Geula. There's a Medrash someplace that says that all five of the end of Osius, Langechof, Shloss Mem, etc., all represent Geula. So that's another point over here. The Shloss Mem over here represents the potential for Geula that existed at that time. But for all these, but for this reason, Hashem didn't do it. So the Chachnis Statim, therefore the Mem is closed off. Now, one interesting point in that regard is you do find in Yeshaya, when it tells the story of Chizkiyahu recovering from his illness, it does say that he said a shira. Then you have a whole shira of about 10 psukim that he says to thank Hashem for saving him from this illness. So he did say shira. So actually, the Yalkut Shimoni says that actually what it was is Chizkiyahu did not say shira for Sanhedrin's downfall. So therefore, Hashem brought upon him to be sick, figuring at least this way he'll say shira for something. So it's a little hard to kvetch into what Rashi's saying over here, that these nisim happened to him, also that he recovered and he didn't say shira, because at least he did say shira on that. But the point is he wasn't motivated to say shira for the downfall of Sanhedrin. There's a few reasons that are there's a few reasons why, actually. There's a medrash that says that he was a that he was a, that he was a, it was gavus ruach, he was arrogant. That everybody already knows how great Hashem is. They see all the nisim Hashem does. We don't really need to say shira for him. And in fact, there is an explanation that it means that Chizkiyahu is tacked on a very high level, and for him, even Nisim are like Derech HaTeva, so therefore he didn't feel a need to say Shira, but still, it's a yeah. So, anyway, so a couple of explanations are given. Magol Yisayam brings, we learned earlier in the Masechta that when Rishoyim are defeated, you don't always say Shira. We said the Malachim were going to sing to Hashem by Kriyas Yamsef, and Hashem tells him, Maisi Yadetavim Bayam. So, here also, Chizkiyahu figured that the whole army has been destroyed, or almost all of it, so therefore it's not appropriate to say Shira. And he goes on to explain that there's different ways. Sometimes it is appropriate to say Shira for the downfall of Rishoyim, sometimes not. So Chizkiyahu misjudged the situation over here and thought that this was one of the kinds where you're not supposed to. Where is it? Before their measure of Eretz is filled up, and therefore that Hashem is doing it only to save us Jewish people, and therefore it's not appropriate necessarily to say shit on it. And there's other points as well. The Rogachover brings something about it that basically once you're saying where the when you have when the whole Jewish people are saved, then you say halal. So here is it considered the whole Jewish people. Here you have the Aseret HaShvatim had already been taken into Golos, so therefore he figures that therefore it's not appropriate to say Shira on it. But in fact that was a mistake because but that was a mistake for a number of reasons, one of them being since they're already in Golos, then that what's left of the Jewish people is still considered the whole Jewish people. But also already during Pesach they're saying Hallel anyhow, so they should continue to say Hallel on behalf of Sanhedrin's defeat. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. So the Gemara continues. Miyad poscha eretz va'amar. So the earth of Eretz Yisrael opened up its mouth to speak to Hashem, and va'amar lefanav, and says to Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, ani ameres lefanecha shira tachas tzadik zeh. So fine, this tzadik didn't say shira. I'll say shira in his place. Va'aseu Mashiach, but make him Mashiach. So even the earth itself, even the earth as a whole, or Eretz Yisrael particularly, desperately wants Mashiach to come, and therefore is willing to even take on herself to say Shira for that. One interesting point, one interesting point, the Chida points out, why would Chizkiyah saying Shira have such tremendous effects, and why is the earth proposing to do it instead? We find elsewhere that when the Jewish people say Shira, then their Averis are forgiven. We find, for example, it says Devorah and Barak said Shira, sang Shira after Sisera was defeated, and the result is the next time when they worshipped Avodah Zarah after Devorah had passed away, it doesn't say Vayesifu Bnei Yisrael, it doesn't say the Jewish people continued to do evil in Hashem's eyes, it just says Vayasu Bnei Yisrael. As though like it's a whole new thing, because all the Averis up to that point had been cleaned up, and now it's like a fresh, a blank slate. So now, if Chizkiyahu had said Shira, would mean all the Averis up to that point would have been wiped away, and therefore it would have been time for Mashiach to come. So anyway, so the earth is saying, "Let me say Shira instead." Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Miknafa oretz." From the edge of the earth, Zmiras Shemayinu, we have heard songs, Tzvi LaTzadik, a beauty, or the word Tzvi, as the Gemara is going to explain, also means the desire of the Tzadik, Vegomer. So the earth is proposing to say Shira on behalf of Chizkiyahu, meaning Omer Sar HaOlam, the Malach of the whole world, the Malach in whom through whom Hashem runs the whole world, elsewhere identified as Malach Matat. Said Ribbono shel Olam, Tzivyonei Aseh LaTzadik Zeh, do for this tzaddik his desire. Of course, Chizkiyahu wants Mashiach. Every yid does, and especially a tzaddik like Chizkiyahu. So do what his desire and bring Mashiach and make him Mashiach. And the earth is saying, I'll say Shira instead of him. Yotza Basko V'Amra, but a Basko came out and answered with the continuation of the Pasuk that we just quoted. The first half of the Pasuk, Miknafa Arad Zmir Shemayna Tzvi LaTzadik. The Pasuk continues, V'Oimar, but I said, Rozi Li, Rozi Li. Rozi means my secret. So Rozi Li, Rozi Li, Hashem says, "My secret is mine." In other words, Hashem has the secret. He only he knows the secret why Mashiach is not going to come now. Omar Novi, see, Yeshaya replies to that with more words of the pasuk, "Oy li, oy li, woe to me." That's how the pasuk goes. Va'omar, "Rozi li, rozi li, oy li." So the Gemara is explaining that "Rozi li" is Hashem saying, "My secret is mine. I know the secret of why Mashiach's not coming now." And Yeshaya responds and says, "Oy li, woe to me. Ad Masai, how long is Mashiach's coming going to be delayed?" Maharsho explains the question is, as the Gemara is going to go point out further on, Chizkiyahu's generation were tremendous tzaddikim and loim de Torah. So if Mashiach is not going to come in a generation like this, when is he going to come? Yeshaya asks. Yotz Abasko v'omra, Abasko came out and answered with the continuation of the pasuk, "Boigdim bagadu." The disloyal ones have been disloyal, have betrayed, Oveged Bogdim Bogadu, and the disloyalty of the disloyal ones has been disloyal. So in other words, there's going to come a time of tremendous tzoras for the Jewish people, and then Mashiach is going to come. So Beged, we're understanding as meaning meaning disloyal, but it also means like people, yeah, exactly that, people who are disloyal, people who betray. So Omar Rav, Omar Ravavi, Tamer Yitzchok, also, Bazuzi over Zuzi de Bazuzi. You're going to have one group of plunderers who are going to plunder the Jewish people, and then you're going to have another group. You're going to have other groups that are going to do it again and again. Like, you're going to have the Jewish people are going to be left with nothing, so they're going to be plundered over and over again. And that's where, at a time like that, is when Mashiach is going to come. It can mean, of course, it doesn't have to be begashmius. It can be beruchnius that we have. We have more than enough already. First of all, we had more than enough already that the goyim have plundered us begashmius, but also beruchnius. We're lacking so much that we can say we've well already been yotzei that, and Mashiach really has to come now. The Gemara continues. The Gemara digresses now to darshan another pasuk about Mashiach coming. Earlier in Sefer Yeshaya, you have a pasuk like this: Masa Duma, the burden of Nevuah of Duma, which is Duma is the name of a Malach, as the Gemara is going to explain now. Duma is also Edom. Yeah, it's actually one of the descendants of Yishmael mentioned in the Pesukim in Mishma Duma or Masa. But it is a Nevuah about Edom and about Gehenna. Yeah, it's the Malach of Gehenna. Yeah. Eli Koda mi Seir, he calls to me from Seir, from the land of Edom. Shomer Mami Laila, watchman, what is of the night? Shomer Mami Leil, the Gomer, watchman, what's going to be with the night? What does that pasuk mean? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Oisin Malach Amunah Al Ruchos, the Malach in charge of all the spirits of people, Duma Shmoy, his name is Duma. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, for example, that a person, but when he passes away, is given over to that Malach, and then that Malach sends him to Gehenim if necessary. So Niskabtsu Kol Ruchos Eitzel Duma. All the spirits, all the neshamas, are gathering together to Duma. Means in particular, Maharsha says the neshamas that are in Gehenim, who again are under Duma's control, and they come together to Duma to talk to him. Omruloi Shomer Mami Leila Milayla Shomer Mami Leil. Hashem, who is our Shomer, who is the guardian of the Jewish people. He know the Yonav Yish and Shomer Yisrael regarding the night. Golos is compared to light. What's going on? What did Hashem say? And what did Hashem, the Shomer, say about what's going to be with the night? Shomer Mami Leil. When is he going to take us out of this Golos? And the Malach answers them with the next pasuk, in Yeshaya, Omar Shomer, the watchman. Hashem says, also voiker, morning comes, v'gam loila, and also night, im kivoyun bo'oyu. If you want to be taken out of Golos, shuvu esoyu, do tshuva, and then you'll come. So in other words, yes, also voiker, there will come a morning of Geula. But the gam loyla, but there's going to be a long golus reaching up to that. And if you want to shorten it into voyun, if you want ba'oyu, then daven for rachmanos and do tshuva, and then esoyu, and then you'll come back, and there will be the gula amidus vashlema. Rashi also explains that it means there's going to be a temporary geula. There's going to be, after all, after the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, there's going to be a second Beis Hamikdash. But then there's going to be another golus, and then eventually there's going to be the geula amidus vashlema. Rashi also brings another point. Vegam loila means that the morning of golus is going to be a night and a darkness for the rishoyim. As in fact, Targum on that pasuk translates just that, as we learned before, that when Mashiach comes, there's going to be people who are going to be brought alive for Chiasa to get their reward, and there's going to be other people who are brought alive to witness their punishment. So it means that as well. The Gemara continues. Tanya, Mishum, going back to what we said before, that Chizkiyahu did not say Shira. Tana Mishumra Papias, Gnai Hu L'Chizkiyah. It's a shameful thing regarding Chizkiyah and his group. There were other great Talmid Chachamim at that time. Shaloi Amru Shira, that they did not say Shira over the defeat of Sennacherib. Shira, until we said the earth opened up its mouth and said Shira. So why didn't they have, why Taka did they not, did why Taka did they not have the motivation to say Shira themselves? Shanema, as we said before, the Pasuk, we've heard songs from the end of, from the edge of the earth, meaning that the earth had to say Shira and not Chizkiyahu. In a similar vein, you have another example. The Pasuk describes when Yisrael comes to see Moshe and the Jewish people, and Moshe tells him about all the details of the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf and all of that. Yisro said, "Blessed is Hashem who saved you from Mitzrayim and Paray." Same thing. It's a shameful thing about Moshe and the 600,000 Jews. Shaloi Amru Baruch, that they didn't say this word Baruch Ad Shebo Yisro, but Amru Baruch Hashem until Yisro came and said Baruch Hashem. They sang a whole Shira to Hashem, but they didn't actually say the word Baruch, which among other things, Baruch represents bringing down all the course into our world, Meloshen Amavrechas HaGefen, and they didn't express that point until Yisrael came along and said that. The Zohar, by the way, mentions that Yisrael coming and saying that was an essential prerequisite. Without that, the Torah couldn't even be given, which is why Matan Torah is in Parshas Yisrael. One interesting explanation, actually, in this regard is that again, we do have that song. We do have that song that that Chizkiyahu sang after he recovered from his illness. But he uses the name Yud K in there. He uses the expression Amarti lo erek ka be'eretz achayim in the Shira Sayam, also Oziv Zimras ka. So like they're not even using the full name of Hashem. So as opposed to Yisrael comes and says Baruch Hashem using the full letter name of Hashem. Okay. Since we're talking about Yisroi, the Gemara digresses and mentions another point about him as well. The Pasuk is Vayichad Yisroi. When Moshe tells Yisroi what happened, then Vayichad Yisroi. So what does that mean? What does that word Vayichad mean? The simple sense is it means he was happy. But the word for that usually would be Vayismach or something like that. Vayichad, so Rav and Shmuel disagree what the Pasuk means. Rav Omar Shehever Cherev Chada Abasorai. Rav says that it means that he passed a sharp sword over his flesh, namely they had Bris Milah. An interesting point that's brought from the Vilna Gaon. Then why does it have to mention? Why use it in such an unusual way? Say Vayomol or something like that. And he answers because Yisrael, after all, is from Midian, and they're from Bnei Keturah, who they were already doing Bris Milah. We learned earlier in the Masechta that Bnei Keturah are obligated in Bris Milah. Now the Rambam learns it means only the six sons of Keturah themselves were chayiv in Bris Milah, not their descendants. But there are Rishonim who learn that it means that the descendants of Keturah are also chayiv in Bris Milah. So Yisrael had him Bris Milah. Now that he's becoming a ger, he needs a tofas dam bris. And for that, you need to make sure to use a sharp sword, a very sharp tool, so he doesn't injure himself in other ways. Anyway, that's one explanation. His whole flesh became covered with goosebumps because he heard what had happened, how Mitzrayim had been punished and drowned. Omar Rav, so Rav says, and then in this connection, or Papa, it says, should be maybe the Girsa, Hainu da Amri Inshi, this is like the expression people say, Giyora, a ger, ad asora dori, even to 10 generations, loy sevaza ar moi kamei, don't make fun of a goy in his presence. Because even it's many generations since his ancestors became Gerim, but he still feels a certain affinity towards the goyim that he stemmed from, and therefore you make fun of goyim in his presence, it's gonna make him feel bad, and you're not supposed to make a ger feel bad. So in the same way, Yisrael is only the first generation, but the same thing. Moshe tells him about what happened, about the bad things that happened to Paroi, and he feels bad about it. So therefore, that shows that you have to have more sensitivity to a ger than that. One interesting point is, okay, I mean, Yisroi is not the 10th generation. How do we learn from this about the 10th generation? One point is, we have to remember that Yisroi, it says, was one of Paray's advisors, and when he advised Paray to not harm the Jewish people, then Paray threatened to kill him, and he had to run away and start a whole new life in Midian. So he would have very good reason to not be sympathetic to the Mitzrayim at all, and nevertheless he was. So therefore, that shows that the same way in future generations. Okay. Getting back now to Sancheiriv and Chizkiyahu, The pasuk says, "Lochein." Therefore, before that, Yeshaya is describing how, even though Hashem sent Sanherib and his army in order to chastise the Jewish people because they deserve it, they their averus need to be cleaned up that they've been doing over the years. Nevertheless, the pasuk goes on to say that Sanherib is thinking of himself very proudly and not realizing that he's kagaz and biyada chotzev, that he's like an axe in the hands of the wood chopper Hashem. He thinks he's acting independently. So therefore, the pasuk says lochein. Therefore, yishalach ha'odin Hashem tzvokas b'mishmanav rozin. Therefore, Hashem will send in mishmanav. Literally means his fat ones, but it means like his strong, robust soldiers. Hashem will send rozin a leanness. In other words, they're going to be killed. They're like this. They're fat and robust and healthy, and Hashem is going to make them lean and weak and kill them. So my b'mishmanav rozin. So the simple meaning b'mishmanav means the fat ones, but the Gemara is going to give another drush on it. That's Meloshin Shmoina, which means eight. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yoveh Chizkiyahu, Shiyash LeShmoina Shemes. Chizkiyahu, who has eight names, will come, V'yipara, and through him will be punished. Misan Chedev, Shiyash LeShmoina Shemes, where Sancheidev is also called by eight names. Marsha explains the point is because again, Mishmanav literally means it's fat ones. You're not going to say in that entire giant army that Sancheidev brought, all of them are fat. Soldiers are usually not fat. Therefore, the Gemara is Darshaning Meloshin Shmoina, Meloshin eight. There is, by the way, we said before that Chizkiyahu could have been Mashiach. The Rebbe points out there's a number of places where we find Mashiach is connected with the number eight. We read about him on Achren Shel Pesach, the eighth day of Pesach. We have the idea that it says in the Medrash that the harp of Mashiach's times, the harp of David was seven strings, and the one of Mashiach's times will be eight strings, because eight represents the Maila Mederach HaTeva, which is what Mashiach is going to be. So therefore, in token of that, Chizkiyahu has eight names, and then since Zelomas is also Elokim, so Sancheiriv, his antagonist, also had to have eight names. Where do we see eight names for each one of them? Chizkiyah, Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Ki yelad yulad lanu, a child has been born to us, bein nitan lanu, a son has been given to us. This is referring to Chizkiyahu, but he am Misra'al shichmoy, the rulership of the Jewish people is going to be on his shoulders. He's going to take over from his father Ochaz, who was a Rosha, and he's going to be a king, a tzaddik. Vayikra shmoy, and his name was called Pela Yoyetz, the wondrous advisor, Kael Gibber, strong God, Aviad, eternal father, Sar Shalom, the prince of peace. Now, in Poshet Pshat, the Mefarshim on the Pasuk explained that most of these are names of Hashem. You can't call a human being Kael Gibber, after all, for example. So it means Hashem, who gives amazing counsel and who is a powerful Hashem and lives forever, he called him Sar Shalom. So according to that, only the last two names, Sar Shalom, refer to Chizkiyah. But here the Gemara is darshaning that all of them referred to Chizkiyah. So a Medrash, in fact, says that he Pela that Hashem did wonders in his times. Yoyetz, he advised the Jewish people to come close to Hashem and then learn Torah. Kael Gibber, he brought the power of Hashem into the world. So not Kael is not he himself, is not Hashem, of course, but he brought the power of Hashem into the world. Avi, he was the father of the Jewish people. Ad, that the Ade Ad refers to the Beis Mikdash, that he helped make that strong, and Sar Shalom, that he was the ruler of the Jewish people, and he brought Shalom between the Jewish people and Hashem. So all of these names, and on that reading, refer to Chizkiyahu himself. So the Gemara asks, what about the actual name Chizkiyah? There's a ninth name. And the answer is that's not his real name. Shechizkoy Kor. He's so called because Hashem strengthened him against Sanherib. Another reason he's called Chizkiyah is because he strengthened the connection between Hashem and between Hashem and the Jewish people. As the Gemara is going to go on to say further, that he motivated everybody to learn Torah. Einol Yoh actually explains then that what it means is that Chizkiyah was a name given to him later, whereas the other names, when Yeshaya is saying this pasuk, he yelled Yulad Lanu, even before Chizkiyah was born, or shortly after he was born. So at that time, he already has the eight names, whereas Chizkiyahu would be a name that he was given in token of what he accomplished later in life. Okay, Sancheiriv, where do we see Sancheiriv has eight names? Dichtiv Beis, he's called by several different names in the Psukim. Now, in Poshet Pshat, a number of the names that we're going to say over here are actually names of different kings of Asher. But the Gemara is understanding that all of them are actually nicknames for Sancheiriv himself. One possibility is that even though they may have actually been different kings, Sancheiriv may have been the advisor to all of them. So therefore, they can be called on his name. In other words, when it says, for example, that King Tiglath-Pileser did such and such, it means he did it under the advice of Sancheiriv, and therefore that can be considered a name of Sancheiriv, and the same thing with the other ones. So you have in Pesukim, Kiglas Pileser, Pilneser, Shaman Eser, Pul, Sargon, Sargin, it says in parenthesis, Osnapa, Rabba, Vyakira. So Rashi explains, and you have as follows. Tiglas Pileser is one. In a different pasuk, it calls him Pilneser, that's two. Shaman Eser is three. Pul is four. Sargon is five. Osnapar is six. And then Rabba Vyakira, which literally means the great and the honorable. Rashi is explaining those are also two names of his as well. So that brings the total to eight. Of course, that girl says that's a little bit of a doichek. So he explains that actually you have in different psukim, you don't need to count Rabba v'Yakira. He lists like this. You have Tiglas Pileser. Then you have in a different place where it says Tiglas Pleser without the Aleph in the middle. Tilgas Pilneser. Tilgas Pleser. So these are all on the face of it. These are all variants of the same name, but the Gemara is understanding those as four different names. Then you have Shaman Eser, Sargon, Asnapper, and you have Pilneser by itself. So there you go. There you have your eight. So again, even though on the face of it, you look in history books, you'll find there was a king of Asher named Shaman Esther. There was a king of Asher named Tiglath-Pileser, etc. But the Gemara's understanding those as actually all names for Sancheiriv. So the Gemara says, Sancheiriv, what about the actual name Sancheiriv itself? And the answer is, again, that's not his real name. He was so called because his speech against Hashem was argumentative. He sent Rav Shekhe to blaspheme Hashem and claim that Hashem has no power, Rachmana Litzlan, and therefore, in token of that, he's called Sancheiriv. Another reason, he said and he snorted words of chutzpah against Hashem, and therefore he's called Sancheiriv. But his real names were the other names that we're saying over here. Amar Rav Yechanan. Now we just said that one of the names for Sancheiriv, or according to Rashi, three of the names is Osnapar Rabba Vyakira. Now, whether you take Rabba Vyakira as actual among the eight names, or whether you say it's just a title, either way, he's being called Rabba Vyakira, the great and the honorable. The context of that pasuk is it's a letter that the Goyim who had been sent to resettle Eretz Yisrael, the Kosim, they sent a letter to Kodesh and later on to Achashverosh, accusing the Jews that they're starting to build the second base of Mikdash, and they're accusing them that they're doing it illegally and they're going to rebel against the government, etc. So the pasuk narrates all the names of all the Goyish nations who participated in writing that letter, and it mentions, so it lists a bunch of them, and then it says, and all the other nations that are snapper, Rabba Vyakira, had come and brought to Eretz Yisrael. So why does the pasuk give him these titles, Rabba v'Yakira? The reason is Yisrael, because he didn't speak negatively against Eretz Yisrael. You have as part of the speech that Rav Shekhe gives to try to convince the Jewish people to surrender in Chizkiyahu's times, he says, you know what, instead of trying to fight uselessly against Sancheiriv, there's no question he and his giant army can overwhelm you. So he says, instead, make peace, and then I'll treat you like I've treated every other nation that's under my control, that I'll go and I'll just send you into Golos in a different country, but I won't kill you. So he says, "Ad boi, until I come, I'll take you to a land like yours." Now he didn't say, "I'll take you to a land better than yours." That shows that he had respect for Eretz Yisrael, that he doesn't consider any other country better than it. But the Gemara says that's not so simple. Rav and Shmuel argue whether and why in fact Sancheiriv said that. One says that he was a wise king for saying such a thing, and the other one saying that he was a foolish king for it. If you say that he was a wise king, means because he knows to himself, if I tell them I'm going to bring you to a land better than yours. And that was, by the way, Sancheiriv's policy. We find that with the Aseret HaShavatim, we find that with the other nations, which is why the Gemara mentions in a few places that in Sancheiriv's times, Bilbul Eskol HaOlam Kula, he mixed up the entire world. That was his policy. Whenever they conquered a country, they would take the people from that country and move them someplace else and then move other people in to take over the country. This way, they're not in their country, they'll be less likely to rebel. So, here he's proposing to do that to the people of Yerushalayim as well. But he says to a land like yours, because he knows if I tell them a land better than yours, Omru, then they would say, Kama Shakrith, you're lying, there's no land better than Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so it was smart of him to not say to say that. The opinion that he was foolish is Imkain Mai Ravuse, then what's the big deal? And what the whole point is, he's trying to get them to surrender. He's going to try to offer them the most generous terms that they should say, you know what, it's worth surrendering. If it's only going to be that we're going to be taken to a land like ours, then they're not really gaining anything from it. And therefore, they're going to say, then in that case, we're going to hold out and we're going to continue trying to fight. So the Gemara says, now when Sanhedrin was proposing, he's saying that if you surrender, then I'll take you to another land. Where would he have taken them to? Mazutra Omer LaAfriki. Mazutra says he would have taken them to Afriki, which may mean Africa, it may mean Phrygia, which is part of Turkey. We do find 1,000 years earlier when the Girgashim ran away from Eretz Yisrael, they went to North Africa. And Hashem, in fact, gave them the land over there was as good as Eretz Yisrael. So that may mean, so it could be the same thing over here. Rabbi Chanina Omer LaHore Slug. Rabbi Chanina says he would have brought them to the mountains of Slug. The Maharal explains that that Slug is Moloshin Sheleg, so it would be mountains, it would be snow-capped mountains. So the Gemara continues, Avo Yisrael Sipur B'Gnusa Shalayot Yisrael. On the other hand, we find that when the Jewish people were taken into Golos, they did speak negatively of Eretz Yisrael. So here we're saying Sancheirev and his emissary Rav Shekei did not. They said another land like Eretz Yisrael, but not better than it. But we find that unfortunately, when Jews went into Golos, they did talk that other countries are better than Eretz Yisrael. He motu sois. When they came to a place called Sois Amri, they said, Shavya Ki Arin, this place is just as good as our land. So in other words, the word that and Sois actually refers to Eretz Yisrael. You fay noif, mis Sois kol aret. So therefore the place was called Sois in token of that. Kimotu Olmin, when they came to a place called Olmin, Omru, they said, Ke Olmin, this is like our world. Yerushalayim is called Beis Olamim, the place where Hashem's Shechina is forever. And they were saying this place is just as good as that. Himotu Soistre, when they came to another place called Soistre, Amri, Al Chad Train. Tre means two. So it means it's twice as good as our land. So each of these places was named for what the Jewish people said when they came there. But the point is, in other words, that they spoke in a derogatory way about Eretz Yisrael. What do you mean this place is twice as good as Eretz Yisrael? We just said there's no place better than Eretz Yisrael. So it shows that they weren't considering Eretz Yisrael to be anything special. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings that this is why we find the Aseret HaShevatim in general didn't return. Yirmiyahu brought a bunch of them back about 100 years later, but other than that, the body of the Aseret HaShevatim never returned. That's one reason why, is because they unfortunately didn't consider Eretz Yisrael to be important enough. They considered these other lands to be better than Eretz Yisrael, so therefore they remained in Golos. Okay. Now, what happened to Sancheirov's army? Yeshaya says in his nevuah, "V'sachas kavodai under or instead of his kavod, yekad yekoid is going to be a burning, is going to be a consuming burning, ki koid esh like the burning of fire." So what does that mean? Tachas kavodai. I'm going to be yechanan tachas kavodai v'le kavodai mamish. It means under. It means what's under their kavod is going to be burnt, but not their kavod itself. So in other words, therefore, the kavod refers to their clothing. So their bodies were burnt. The bodies of Sancheirov's army, of his soldiers, were burnt, but their clothing remained intact. We find that Rabbi Yochanan called his clothing my honorers. So the same way, it means in other words, their body, their clothing will stay intact, but underneath it, their clothing will remain intact, but underneath it, what's underneath the clothing, their bodies will be burnt by a fire from Hashem. Rabbi Lozo Omer, tachas kvoidei mamish. Rabbi Lozo understands that kvoidei means the nefesh. We find sometimes where the neshama is called kvoidei, like ura kvoidei. So therefore, it means what's under. So it means what's under the nefesh, meaning the body. Kisreifas bnei Aaron, meaning that it's going to be like the burning of, like it's going to be like the way that Nadav and Avihu were burnt. Malahalon, sreifas neshama v'guf kayim, just like over there, their neshamas were burnt. Their fire went into their nostrils, as it talked about earlier in the Masechta, and their bodies remained intact. In fact, the Gemara earlier in the Masechta learned that's how we know how sreifa is done to a person who's chayiv misses based in. The body remains intact. Afkan sreifas neshama v'guf kayim. So it is over here. So in short, in other words, according to Rabbi Lazar, the bodies and the clothing remained intact, and just they were killed by the fire, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, the clothes remained intact, and the bodies were burnt. Interesting point that is mentioned in a Medrash is that the nation of Ashur is descended from Shem. Thousands of years earlier, we had when Shem and Yefes saw what was going on with Noach in his tent over there. They took a blanket and covered him. So in the schus of that is why we Jewish people who are descended from Shem have as a result of that the mitzvah of tzitzis, which covers our bodies. But the goyim also got a reward, and part of that is that their clothing was left intact now when they were destroyed and burnt in Sancheirov's times. The Gemara continues, Tonim Shmei de Rabbi Shor ben Korcha. who reviled Hashem on his own. He didn't send a shliach for it. He himself spoke in a chutzpah, took away to Hashem. Nifra. So Hashem, so to speak, personally punished him. Who blasphemed Hashem through a shliach. He didn't go himself to Yerushalayim. He sent Rav Shekei as his messenger. Nifra HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menu, Ayidei Shliach, that Hashem punished him through a shliach. Rashi explains, in other words, that to send a messenger is less honorable. If Sancheiriv himself had come and given this speech, it would show at least a little more respect. So it would be a very disrespectful speech, but still it would show at least that he's willing to set aside his own royal honor and come in person to deliver this message. The fact that he sent a shliach, so therefore Hashem says that in that case, you know what, I'll do a bazillion to you. I'm not even going to punish you personally. I'll do it through a shliach, through a malach. That's according to Rashi, by the way. Maharsho explains the other way around. Sancheiriv did it through a shliach, so therefore, like in a way, it's a lesser insult to Hashem to have a shliach do it rather than him himself. And in fact, the shliach is kind of at fault over here. The Gemara mentioned earlier in the Masechta that Rav Shekei, the shliach over here, was actually a Yisrael mummer. He was actually a yid who had become a mummer, who had apostatized and accepted their religion and their way of life. So Hashem is, so to speak, saying, so fine, then I'm not going to punish you so severely. I'll just send the malach, as opposed to Parai, was acted in a more chutzpahdik way, and therefore he deserves a harsher punishment from Hashem himself. Parai himself said, who was Hashem that I should listen to his voice? Nifra HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menu Ba'atzmai. Hashem personally punished him. Hashem, as it says, Hashem tossed the Mitzrayim in the sea. And you have another passage, Hashem, you made your horses tread in the water. So representing it was like Hashem trod on them and stepped on them and crushed them and crushed them in the water. There are different opinions, by the way, what happened to Parai over there. There's a famous medrash that Parai himself survived Kriyas Yamsuf and later on became the king of Nineveh, and he's the one that when Yonah came, then that's why he took him seriously. There is, by the way, a very interesting medrash that says that Parai, eventually when he died, he stands in front of the gates of Gehenim, and every time a new anti-Semitic ruler comes in future generations, every time a Hitler or a Sinwar or whatever, any of these Yimach Shemoniks comes, then Parai says to him, you should have learned from my example not to stir it up with the Jewish people. So Parai was punished personally by Hashem. Sancheiriv dichtiv biyad malachecha, right after Hashem. Sancheiriv, where it says, through your messengers, you've blasphemed Hashem. Nifra HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menu Ayidei Shliach. Then Hashem punished him through a shliach. Dichtiv vayetze malach Hashem. A malach of Hashem came out. Vayachna b'machna Asher meyur shmeinu v'chamishim olaf v'gemer. And he killed in the camp of Asher 185,000 soldiers, etc. So we see that the malach was sent to do it rather than Hashem doing it himself. By the way, the Gemara mentions later on that it's not just the army was a lot bigger than that, 185,000 is only the leaders of the units of the army. The actual army was much bigger, as we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So the Gemara continues with more psukim about Sancheiriv and about Chizkiyahu. The pasuk says, now you have like this, the story, all the details of the story of Sancheiriv and threatening Yerushalayim and then being defeated are mentioned in three places in Tanakh. It's in Sefer Melachim, and that's repeated almost word for word in Sefer Yeshaya, or the other way around, really, because Yeshaya wrote a Sefer earlier, but whatever, it's in Yeshaya, and it's repeated almost word for word in Sefer Melachim. And then you have a description of it also in Divrei Hayamim in different words. So there's a number of, even though, so in Melachim and Yeshaya, the words are almost identical, but you have a number of differences between them. So now the Gemara is going to focus on one of those differences. Rab Chanina bar Papa Rami, k'siv meroim kitzoy, uchtiv meloin kitzoy. In Yeshaya, when it quotes, the Navi quotes what Sancheiriv had been saying, and saying, because you spoke in a chutzpahdik way about Hashem, therefore Hashem is going to punish you. So he says, V'ovim miroim kitzay, I will come to his utmost height. But then in Melachim, when it repeats it, it says meloin kitzay. It says I'll come to the dwelling place, the lodging, to the extreme lodging. So what did he say? Meroim u'meloin. So the Gemara is saying it's both. He thinks, first I'm going to destroy the dwelling of Hashem here on earth, and then it says, and then I'm going to destroy the Beis Hamikdash in Shemayim. So therefore, so Meruim Kitzoy refers, it actually explains, to the Beis Hamikdash down here on earth. So first he's saying that, but then he's figured that now once I did that, I can destroy the Dira Shamayla, Beis Meloine, the place of Hashem's lodging, Lamayla in Shemayim as well. He thought that he would have the ability to do that as well. So in other words, in short, he figures, listen, he knows enough to know that the Beis Hamikdash in Shemayim is parallel to the one here on earth. So he thought that if he destroys the one here on earth, then he can also damage the one Lamaila. So therefore the Pasuk uses these two different expressions to hint to that. Okay, another thing from Rav Shakeh's speech. He said, Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, my dichtiv, what does it mean? Ata, now, says Rav Shakeh in Sancheirov's name. Hami bal adei Hashem, do you think it's not with Hashem's permission, olisi ala mokam azel ashchisa, that I've come to this place to destroy it? Hashem, Omar Eli, alei ala oretz hazois v'ashchisa. Hashem told me, come to this land and destroy it. So my he. So what does he mean by that? The actual Lashon HaPasuk is slightly different, but whatever. The point is al instead of el. But anyway, the point is, how could Rav Shakeh, okay, he's a chutzpah nyak and he's speaking disrespectfully against Hashem, but he's not going to say something which is a blatant lie, which they could catch him out on. So where did Hashem ever tell him to go destroy Eretz Yisrael? So the answer is the Shama le Novi de Karmar. He heard that previously the Novi Yeshaya had been saying Yan. Because this people have refused the waters of the Shiloyach, that the Shiloyach is the spring by Yerushalayim, that flow gently, and they're happy with Ritzin and the son of Ramal Yahu. So then the code goes on to talk about the consequences. And as the Gemara will explain, Sancheirov therefore deduced from that Nevuah of Yeshaya that as a punishment for that, he's going to come and conquer Eretz Yisrael. So what is this business with Ritzin and Ben Ramal Yahu is like this. The Pasuk describes in Yeshaya at one point, Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekach ben Ramal Yahu, the king of the Aseret HaShevatim, formed a coalition to attack the land of Yehuda. This was in the times of Ochaz, Chizkiyahu's father. They were actually, in Divrei Hayomim, it describes, they were quite successful. They killed many soldiers from Yehuda. They took a huge number of captives, etc. Anyway, but it turns out, based on what Yeshaya is saying, apparently there were many people in Yehuda also who liked the idea. They were fine with the idea that Ritzin and Pekach ben Ramal Yahu would rule over them. So Hashem is saying, because they've abandoned the waters of the Shiloyach, and instead they're going after Ritzin and Ben Ramal Yahu. What does the Shiloyach have to do with it? Amar Rabbi Yosef, Molei Targum and Dehai Kro, Lo Havi Yadayna Mai Kamar. If it weren't for the Targum Yonason on this Pasuk, I wouldn't understand what does it mean. What does the Shiloyach have to do with it? It means, and Targum translates chalof, because the kotz ama hadein, this people have been disgusted by, but malchus de base David, in the malchus base David, the midaber lahoin b'niyoch, who leads them gently, kimei shiloicha, the nagdan b'niyoch, like the waters of the shiloyach that flow gently. So in other words, the shiloyach is being used as a metaphor for the malcha Yehuda, who treat the Jewish people respectfully and gently. And instead they want Ritzin and Ben and Pekach Ben Ramal Yahu as their rulers. So therefore, so in other words, so the Pasuk is saying that, look, you're rejecting Malchus Beis David, which is the best thing for you, and you think that these foreign rulers would be better for you. Therefore, the Pasuk is going to go on. So now the Gemara is going to quote next, is going to quote soon the next Pasuk that Yeshaya continues, what the consequences of it are going to be. But first, the Gemara interjects something to show us the contrast between Pekach ben Ramal Yahu and Chizkiyahu. Their reigns didn't overlap, actually. Pekach was killed, was assassinated about 12 years before Chizkiyahu became king. But still, the Gemara can point out the contrast between this Pekach, who the Jewish people wanted, some people wanted him as king, versus Chizkiyahu, where people were saying, who needs him, basically. So the Pasuk says, the curse of Hashem is in the house of the Rasha, but the dwelling of the Tzaddikim will be blessed. This refers to this king, Pekach ben Ramal Yahu. He would eat, just for dessert, 40 saw of roasted pigeons. So it may not mean him personally, it may mean his whole family and entourage and everything, but the point is that there was a klala that despite no matter how much he ate, he never felt satisfied. So he has to eat more and more. Or Neveit Tzaddikim Yivarech. But when it continues, the dwelling of the Tzaddikim, Hashem will bless. Zechizkiya Melech Yehuda. Litra. This refers to Chizkiyahu. He could eat 1 liter, a few ounces of vegetables for a soda, and that would be enough to fill him up, and that would be he would be satisfied from that. So now the point is, though, that Jewish people saw that Chizkiyahu is not having a royal kingly table full of all kinds of delicacies like most kings do. So they thought, no, Oichmer king, who needs him? And therefore they were saying, you know what, Pekach, now he acts like the way we have a mental image of a king. So that's the Navi is criticizing them for thinking this way, as though the important thing about a king is the size of his table. So now. And Navi continues, V'lochein, therefore, Hine Hashem mala aleim, Asmei ha-noho, ha-tsumim va-rabim, Hashem is going to bring against them the waters of the tremendously strong and powerful river, Esmelech Asher, the king of Asher. So in other words, Hashem is saying, you didn't want the spring of Shiloyach, which flows gently, now you're going to have this mighty river that's going to come and flood your country. Uchtiv, and the pasuk continues. V'cholaf Yehuda shota forever. He will pass through Yehuda. He will flood as he passes through. Ad savo yagia. He will reach all the way up to the neck. One thing is a neck is a metaphor for the Beis Hamikdash, so it means he is going to in fact be successful in conquering most of Eretz Yisrael and be on the verge of conquering Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash as well. So therefore, so now Sancheiriv heard of that nevuah. So therefore, that gave him the idea that Hashem had actually said that he should come and conquer and destroy Eretz Yisrael. Okay, well, Ella to my time at Ianish, well, then why was he punished? And the point is, you know, you have the famous question, for example, let's say, why Hashem punished the Mitzrayim when Hashem had previously said that Va'avodim Ve'inu Oysem. It was in Rambam, Shloisha Prokim, the other day. The Rambam says the reason, because Hashem hadn't said that any individual Mitzri is going to do it. Hashem had just said, collectively, it's going to happen. And every individual Mitzri had his choice whether to participate. The Ravid disagrees and says a couple of other explanations. One is that they were over-harsh to the Jewish people. Another one is because they hadn't, there's other another answer that's given, is because they weren't doing it because Hashem said so. They did because of their own selfish reasons, but here Sancheiriv is following a nevuah from Hashem. So then, in that case, why does he deserve to be punished and his whole army wiped out? And the reason is Navi Aseres HaShvatim is Navi, because the Navi was actually not talking about the people of Yehuda. He was talking about the Aseres HaShvatim who preferred Pekach and other corrupt kings like that as their kings. Iyu Yoiv Daiti Al Kolish Al Kol Yerushalayim. Sancheiriv was thinking to conquer the entire Yerushalayim as well, and the Beis Hamikdash, and he was wrong in that because Hashem hadn't given him permission to do that. Hashem had told him that he can pass through Eretz Yisrael and destroy the kingdom of the Aseres HaShvatim, but not that he should touch Yehuda and Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash. By the way, I mean, the question is, what do you mean he shouldn't have been punished? And the fact is, he reviled and blasphemed Hashem. But fine, that would be a reason for him personally to be punished. Why was his whole army wiped out? And the answer is because of this, because his army and he had no business going into Yehuda in the first place. So Bon Novi v'omale, so a Novi came and said to Sancheiriv, replied to him, you're making a mistake that you think that you should conquer the land of Yehuda as well. The pasuk says, Ki loy muaf lasha mutzak lo. There is no... The simple meaning of the pasuk is something like the one who harasses the Jewish people is not going to be tired. So the simple meaning of it is, in other words, Sancheiriv, who's harassing and about to conquer the Jewish people, is not going to be weary at all. He's going to continue traveling and continue fighting and be constantly successful. But now the Gemara is taking it in a different sense. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Berechia, Ein Nimser Am Oyef Batoira Biyad Min Hametzik Loi. A nation that wears themselves out and is tired through learning Torah is not going to be given over to the mates to the one who harasses them. So it's kiloy muaf, the nation that is tired, that wears themselves out learning Torah, will not be lashem mutzak la. They will not be given over into the control of you, Sancheiriv, who are the matesik, who are the one who's harassing and then trying to conquer them. Because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that Chizkiyahu got all the people in his kingdom to learn Torah, and therefore the schus of their Torah is going to protect them, and Sancheiriv, you have no business starting up with them. So therefore, you're saying that Hashem told you to come to this land and destroy it. No, Hashem never told you to come to the land of Yehuda, because they're learning Torah, and therefore they're immune to you. So the Gemara Darshan is, what about the end of that pasuk? The pasuk continues, Eis Harishon Heikal. Now the beginning was easier. Out of Zvulun, the land of Zvulun, va'out of Naphtali, and the land of Naphtali, va'achron Hichvid, and the later one was harsher. Derech Hayom, the way of the sea, Eivra Yaudin, the other side of the Yaudin, Glila Goyim, the districts of the Goyim. Simple meaning of the pasuk is talking about when Sanhedrin conquered the land near Aseres HaShvatim. He did it in stages. First, he conquered the extreme north of Eretz Yisrael, where Shevet Zvulun and Naphtali lived, and took them into Golos. And then afterwards, it was piecemeal. Afterwards, it was he conquered the Shvatim who lived near the sea, and the ones in Eivra Yarden, and the ones elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael. So in simple pshat, it's talking about the way that Sanhedrin gradually conquered and destroyed the kingdom of the Aseres HaShvatim. But the Gemara is darshaning that Yeshaya is telling Sanhedrin, Loi Korishonim, Ko'es Harishon, but not Korishonim, not like the earlier ones, the Aseres HaShvatim, that you took them in Golos, and some of them, such as Zvulun and Naphtali, are listed in the Pasuk, Shehem Hekelu Me'aleim El Torah, they made it easy on themselves the yoke of Torah. Ka'es HaRishon HaKal, were darshan, those earlier ones that you conquered and destroyed a few years earlier, they made the yoke of Torah easier on themselves. They said, we don't need to bother learning. And in fact, Zvulun and Naphtali, we find earlier in Jewish history, they had been among the great Talmid Chacham of the Jewish people. But now they had slacked off and they didn't consider it important to learn Torah anymore. So therefore, they deserve to be taken into Golos. Aval Achronim, but the later ones, Sheikh Bidu Aleim El Torah, who made the yoke of Torah heavy on themselves, Va'achron Hichbid, as the Pasuk is saying, they took on the heavy yoke of Torah. Then therefore, as the Pasuk continues, Derech Hayom Eivra Yarden, Ru'uyin Alolu, Lasas Lahem Nes, Ka'ovra Hayom Ha'Derech Hayarden. Such people deserve to have Nisim done for them, like when the Jewish people crossed through the Yam, Suf, Eivra Hayom, Meloshon Ovre, they passed through the Yam, and like the ones who went through the Yarden, so that's Derech Hayom, Eivra Hayarden is Darshan on those things. So therefore, so the Novi is saying, Im Chozebo, if you change your mind and you don't try to fight against Yehuda and Yerushalayim, Mutav, then good. V'im lav ani esel glil bagoyim. If not, then I'm going to make him a glil among the nations. Glil meaning rolling around. In other words, he's going to be rolling around in embarrassment among the goyim because his army is going to be destroyed and he's going to be a laughing stock. Or Rashi says another explanation: glil. Meloshim Glolim, he's going to be like waste, like human or animal waste, which is tossed aside the same way you're going to be tossed aside because of the way that you're acting. So therefore, someone who was a Navi is telling him, don't think you have the right to conquer this part of Eretz Yisrael. No, you do not. The Nevuah was strictly about the Aseres HaShvatim because they slacked off in Torah learning, but these people are not like that at all. And we'll continue.